Chapter 22.
The mood was somber that night at the encampment. Work would begin on the shuttle, but not yet. Everyone needed to process what had happened. Steven had ordered that Aizen's corpse be put in the usual place, though even crunchers might well choke on such putrid meat, he had added. Upon his return to the encampment, he'd wordlessly taken a speeder bike and roared off by himself. No one seemed to notice or care when the members of Inferno Squad did the same thing, one by one. Aiden had directed them to a specific spot she'd found during her daily runs. Although they'd all grown largely accustomed to living in near darkness, they'd brought their night vision goggles to keep alert for predators, both the two-legged and the multi-legged kind. "It's good to see you," Aiden said.
"It's good to see you and Gideon at all, considering what happened on the mission," Del said. "And Steven wasn't very stable when he got off the shuttle, either. I thought he was going to blast you first and figure things out later."
"You weren't the only one," Gideon said, then added lightly, "although I'd have made a fine leader if that had happened."
"Not yet," Aiden said. She looked at them and squared her shoulders. "A good day's work for sure, but we still haven't made inroads on where the Partisans have been getting their information. Nothing they had been able to obtain from Del's investigation into Aizen via the ship's logs indicated he had anything of note. It did look like he had hoped kidnapping Aiden would be the big score to restore his favor in the eyes of ISB.
I guess either Steven has his own informant off-world that he's being extraordinarily tight-lipped about, or else your friend, the mentor, is sitting on something he's doling out sparingly," Sen said.
"He's not my friend," Aiden said, quicker than she intended. "There's tension between those two, and we need to start pushing that hard," she said. "Gideon, Steven seems to have taken to you. He's going to need a friend right now after Nadrine's death and Aizen's betrayal. Plant some doubt in his head about the rest of the group, even me if you have to, but especially the mentor and those who seem to think like him."
"I will be the absolute best friend Steven's ever had," Gideon promised.
"How are things going with Piakau?" Aiden asked Del.
"Fine. He seems to like everyone, and everyone likes him."
Aiden shook her head. "Not good enough. Piakau appears to operate on an even keel. Convince him that Steven isn't a trustworthy leader anymore. Sen," she turned to the youngest member of the team, "so far you've done a fine job ingratiating yourself with the Vushans. Keep up the good work. I'll continue trying to get information from the mentor. Does anyone have any questions?"
There were none.
"All right. We'd better wander back to the encampment. It's all right for us to be seen together now, I think. We're all welcome here at this point. But I'd rather it not happen too often. Calm me if you learn anything or you think there's trouble." Gideon punched Del in the shoulder.
"Come on, brother mine. Let's head on back."
"Hey, quit punching me," Del said good-naturedly. "I'm your big brother, remember?"
But I'm the witty and dashing younger brother who flies the ship and gets to have all the fun."
Their voices faded. Sen started to head back too, but Aiden said, "Sen, I need a word."
"Of course," the other woman replied promptly.
"We've all been making friends here, but you're the only one who's involved in, well, I suppose it's a romantic relationship."
"Not to worry, Captain. I don't love Sidori any more than Gideon is Staven's best friend."
"If there is something between you two, I need to know. Things like that can get tricky."
"Permission to speak freely."
At Aiden's nod, Sen said,
"I've worked with literally hundreds of agents, many in deep cover. I'm well aware of the peril of getting emotionally involved. Besides, he's just a teenager."
"He's 18, you're 20, Aiden said. "It's not that big of an age gap, but your point is well taken. I'm sorry I questioned your judgment."
"It's understandable, Captain. Will that be all?"
"Dismissed." On impulse, Aiden decided to climb one of the trees. She was feeling stifled under the deep canopy. When she stuck her head out of the leafy cover, pulled off her night goggles, and beheld the glittering starfield, she felt a tug of homesickness.
how she wanted to be out there in the Corvus, wearing her uniform again. She had asked Sen not because she doubted the other woman's resolve, but because she herself was surprised by how the deaths had affected her. It had been part of the plan, of course, and at the time the idea had been conceived, she had felt nothing. But Caeve and Nadrine had been easy to like, and seeing the anguish in Staven and how it had affected all the partisans, she didn't like where her thoughts were going.
"Permission to come aboard, Captain," Del called. Despite her somber mood, she was smiling as she said, "Permission granted." Within a few minutes, he was on a branch beside her. "Thought you were headed back to camp with Gideon."
"Couldn't help but notice you wanted to talk to Sen."
He pulled off his goggles and looked at the stars, as she had done, then turned to her.
"You okay?"
"We got rid of Azen and cemented our position in the group. Why wouldn't I be?"
"I just wanted to make sure you weren't too rattled by what happened today," he replied. "We chat with, laugh with, eat with, and fight alongside these people, even sleep next to them. They're still the enemy. This is harder than combat. It's easier to kill someone whose favorite color you don't know, or who hasn't trusted you with their dreams." He paused, then said, "Gideon told me Staven cried."
"Really?"
I asked, surprised. "He did. It shook him. It's the second time he's lost a woman he loved."
"I suppose we can use that," Iden said. There must have been something in the tone of her voice, because he turned to look at her.
"They're rebels, Iden," Del said kindly. "They're not people. We can't think of them like that. If we do, we can't finish what we came here to do."
"Were you trying to convince me or yourself?" Iden asked.
"Both of us, I guess."
"If Gideon were here, he'd say, 'Thinking about them as people makes you soft, and Versios aren't soft.' And he'd be right, wouldn't he?"
Iden was more than ready for another mission to happen, and glad that Sen, who had done so much without complaining behind the scenes for so many others, was going to finally see some action. As long as Sen returned safely, Iden didn't even care if the mission was a success or a failure. Success would buoy Staven and distract him from his moodiness that so often seemed to be directed her way. Failure would make him more unstable and give the mentor something to point to. It was a fairly straightforward mission, though it relied heavily on Sidori and Sen being convincing in their roles as two teenage schoolchildren. The event was a public relations stunt. The relatively calm world of Anukara was opening a munitions factory. Anukara's Moff, Riss Dexia, would be playing host to General Ival Toshin for a public ceremony to open the plant. Students from a nearby school would be given a special tour and get to meet their Moff and the General. Afterward, there would be a luncheon for the dignitaries. The idea was for Sen and Sidori to blend in with the students and plant a bomb at the final stop of the tour, the Great Hall. It would kill them off and the General, and in Staven's words, send a strong message about how far we're willing to go to stop the Empire.
Dana frowned a little. "You'll delay the opening, and that'll cost them a lot of credits, which is good. But while Toshin and Dexia are public figures, they're not very highly placed," she said.
Iden and her team, of course, had offered no objection to the plan. This was as her father had warned her. Sometimes her own people would have to die. She thought of the stormtrooper, beaten bloody, who had died still trying to rally and fight. The assassination of a Moff and a mid-level general would be a black eye to the Empire. But Dana was right. This wasn't a statement about how far they would go.
"No, they're not, but you see, they're not the real targets."
Iden had a terrible suspicion. He couldn't possibly be suggesting what she thought he was. Not even the dreamers would...
"It's the children."
Several people spoke at once, most of them sounding as stunned as Iden felt.
"We're not child murderers," snapped Dana. "There's nothing more innocent than a youngling, Staven,"
Pia Kao pleaded. The Kagi said nothing, but Sidori looked stunned, his gray face paler than usual. Her team was struggling to keep their composure, and Aiden herself felt cold sweat gathering at her brow line and under her arms.
Absolutely not!
The voice was deep with anger, resonant, and brooked no disagreement. The mentor, who usually sat quietly and seldom even offered an opinion when the missions were being assigned, was on his feet. His fists were clenched, and his eyes were bright with righteous fury. Staven didn't rise. He stayed seated atop one of the flattened boulders, meeting the mentor's hot fury with cold eyes.
"This isn't your group, Mentor," he said. "You have no voice here." "I will not allow this, Staven," the mentor continued, as if Staven hadn't even spoken. "This is too far. I told Saw, and I will tell you, there are limits to what you can do. If you exceed them, you are on the side of hate and cruelty, and that's the side of the Empire. If you want to sit next to them at the table, killing children is the quickest way to do it. I've given everything to fight the Empire."
Now Staven did rise and took two steps toward the mentor.
"Everything! I've got nothing left but hate and cruelty. And I will shove that down the Empire's throat every chance I get until they choke on it."
"The mentor's right," said Staven's second in command. "We can't kill innocent children."
"Dana, these aren't innocent children," Staven said. "They've been robbed of their innocence because they're children of the Empire. They're already rotting on the inside. They may be young, but their family, their friends, their culture is our enemy. And they'll grow up to get into stormtrooper uniforms and kill us and our loved ones."
Aiden swallowed hard as the words of her father came back to her.
"The child of a rebel may be a child yet, but we must look to the future. It will grow up to be an enemy, and our enemies must be destroyed."
"Our enemies must be destroyed."
Aiden wasn't aware that she had just spoken until all heads turned toward her. The mentor looked startled. Her jaw tensed, but she didn't deny the words. She had to communicate to her team that no matter how brutal or personally devastating the task, they had to complete it. They couldn't risk the mission. Aiden made a vow, then and there. This would be the last mission in which they would participate. Her team would set the mentor and Staven against each other just like they were now, their own codes and morals like sharp teeth rending one another. Inferno Squad would determine who had the intel, where it was hidden, and take it. And let the tiny handful that remained of Saw Gerrera's partisans see their dream drown in despair and discord. The beast would devour itself. Del had been able to hack into the system and obtain the codes that permitted them to land near a school shuttle filled with nearly 400 excited human children, ages 14 through 18. Dressed in matching school uniforms, Sen and Sidori walked over to board the shuttle. Only humans were admitted into the school, so Sidori was disguised. He had spent over an hour having his pale gray face and neck covered with concealing cosmetics. He wore contacts that turned his naturally pink eyes brown and hid their soft glow. Fortunately, the school permitted gloves as long as they were black.
"We do this all the time,"
he had told Sen.
"This is a weapon that's every bit as important as a blaster or a vibroblade. Kagis aren't commonly seen outside of quartzite, so if we don't want to attract attention, on this stuff goes."
Sen, who had supervised so many undercover agents, was impressed. Each Kagi had their own palette. While all three had had gray skin, their shades varied, and the cosmetic hues were selected to match the tone as much as possible. Halia, for instance, would apply warmer, darker colors that made her resemble Aiden, whereas paler Sidori's human color was closer to Gideon's. This school was not a military one, so Sidori was able to keep his long black locks and thus conceal his Kagi ears. If someone took the time to examine him, they might notice the flaws, but Sen knew from experience that people generally saw what they expected to see.
Sure enough, the harried teachers glanced cursorily at the two students, and then at the IDs Sen had so carefully crafted, and waved them through without pause. Sidori was proud of her. Sen had expected nothing less.
"Go all the way to the back and fill in all the seats," one of the teachers instructed.
Sidori went first. Sen followed. Then...
"Wait!"
Sen tensed. The teacher, a tall, slender man with sharp features and a dully pained expression, peered at the droid affixed to Sen's back.
"You can't take the droid with you."
"Check the card," Sen said, as if she was tired of reminding people. "I've got a medical condition that it helps monitor."
He looked at her skeptically, then reread her ID card.
"All right, you can bring it, but it will have to go into the compartment at the rear during the flight."
Sen rolled her eyes and then said,
"Okay, okay."
She looked over her shoulder and addressed the droid.
"You heard him," she said. "Go on, I'll wait for you outside when we get there."
The droid booped its acknowledgement, detached itself, tucked up its limbs, and flew over the heads of the excited students as it made its way to the rear of the shuttle. Sidori had already found a seat and waved her over.
"Are you nervous?"
His voice was pitched low as he reached for Sen's hand and squeezed it. She squeezed back.
"A little," she said.
And it wasn't entirely a lie. How many agents had she monitored? How many more had she sent into the field in situations nearly identical to the one she was experiencing now? She could do a count if she had the time, but knew it was numbered in the hundreds.
And how many didn't make it back?
She pushed the thought aside. She had to focus on the job at hand. She settled back into her seat, making no effort to remove her hand from his gloved one. It helped with their cover. Two teenagers more engrossed in each other than anything else. No one looked twice. Beneath their uniforms, as always, when the partisans went on a mission, they both wore patches of the malleable explosives. The material was difficult to detect, and while the Empire did have the technology to do so, such scanners were still new, prone to breaking, and very expensive. The intel that they had on the plant on Onokara was that such equipment had not yet been installed. Sen hoped that was still true. If not, the droid would be able to disable the scanner. The flight to the weapons factory was filled with the loud sounds of rambunctious students and completely uneventful. When they exited the shuttle, Sen waited, and the droid emerged and immediately settled again onto her back.
"Let's go,"
Sidori said. He leaned over as if to kiss her cheek, but instead whispered, "You're going to do great." She smiled at him and fished out her comlink.
"Hi, Dad," she said brightly. "We're here, waiting to get in. I am so excited."
"Stop making me feel old," Del said. "Will you get to keep the calm? Your mother and I are worried, you know." She could imagine Aiden's eye roll. Sidori, so much taller than she, craned his neck to look up ahead and nodded to her.
"Looks like," she told Del.
"We'll be there to pick you up when you're all done. Just let us know when you're ready."
"Thanks, I'll talk to you soon."
Garrick Versio had been right. The trick in deceiving someone was to mix as much truth as possible into your lies and be relaxed about what you were doing. Sen agreed completely. If you behaved as if you belonged, people usually overlooked you. Some, in fact, could smell fear, and sweat droplets or quick breathing were dead giveaways among human and near-humans, as had been the case at the Singularity bombing. So she held her boyfriend's hand and looked excited and obeyed instructions as the river of students was shuttled through. She had to rely on Sidori's height advantage for information about what was around them. He told her everything he noticed that was of import, couching the information in ways that sounded completely innocuous, such as, "Wow, there must be at least 25 stormtroopers here. They're lined up on both sides of the gate." He was extremely good at this. If his parents had the same skill level, then Staven was squandering them by only using the Coggies in a fight. They gathered outside the main entrance, where an exaggeratedly large red ribbon draped across the huge door to the building. A stormtrooper stood rigidly at attention, his gloved hands closed about the hilt of a lengthy vibroblade that would shortly be cutting the ribbon. The ceremony was open to the public. The intel that Staven said he had obtained indicated that this would be the most heavily secured area. If anything was to go wrong, it would most likely be here. While they waited, Sen went over the plan. At approximately 0900 local time, the local moth, Ristexia, and the visiting dignitary, General Ival Toshin, would emerge to formally open the factory. Speeches and posing for the cam droids was expected to last 20 minutes, and then the students would be admitted for their tour of the facility. Their IDs would be checked once more, but security was expected to be relaxed, as this was a contained, previously screened group of local teenagers. They would begin moving through the factory at 0920, and the two-hour tour would culminate with a half-hour meet-and-greet at 11:30 in a receiving area that had been laid out for a banquet. There, the students would be permitted to interact with the general, the moth, and their aides. At noon, the students would return to their shuttle, and the dignitaries would be served luncheon at the same site at 12:30. Except that wasn't what would happen. At 11:55, everyone in the room would be dead. The ribbon-cutting ceremony went off smoothly, with Dexia and Toshin keeping their speeches brief and to the point. Sen knew of Toshin and was aware that he, like so many moths, had a preference for the finer things in life. She wondered if someone in a position of authority was unhappy with his performance recently and had sent him out to this backwater world as a reprimand. He certainly didn't look like someone who was happy to be here. After the speeches, each of the two men placed one hand on the vibroblade's hilt and together cut the ridiculous ribbon, which fluttered prettily in a sudden breeze. Everything was captured by the cam droids. It was intended to be what was called a fluff piece, but later, Sen knew, it would be regarded as hard news. Something fluttered inside her, and she frowned, quelling the sensation. Aiden had made it clear that Sen was not to interfere with the execution of the Dreamer's plan. Sen was an Imperial agent, a member of an elite team, and casualties happened in war. And what was happening now, as cheerful, excited students clogged the main doorway eager to get in, was as much a battle as any that was fought between starships. She was, of course, stopped when they reached the initial main scanner, and she had to explain to the tired-looking guard that the droid was medically authorized. As proof, she produced her fake ID. The guard waved her through. So far, so good. Time to check in.